And welcome to Here We Stand. I am your host, Kevin Anand Eagle Strong Voice, back as always. It's February the 16th, and we are here always, every Sunday. For those of you new listeners, we're broadcast on the BBS network, have been for the last 5 years, and you can find our work regularly archived at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS Archives, and of course on the BBS radio network. Now, today, carrying on from last week, of course, last week's big announcement was the celebration of the 7th anniversary of the deposing of Joseph Ratzinger, a.k.a. Pope Benedict, who's still hiding out in the Vatican. As we say, the rat is still in the vat, folks. Well, he's doing that because of standing arrest warrants against him. We went into some detail last week about the nature of those warrants and how they're ongoing. They're open-ended. Anyone can enforce them, and any court in the world can also issue arrest warrants based on them. Now, we are going to continue this theme over the next number of weeks leading into March because some very important events coming up, especially the common law court that's convening in Vancouver, Canada on Monday, March 30th. And leading up to that, it's very important to make the connections. As you know, if you've listened last week, our work to expose Vatican crimes that originated actually in Canada in the Indian Residential School campaign that confirmed ongoing genocide in Canada. This campaign has evolved into a much broader one involving modern crimes against humanity, and especially a group called the Ninth Circle, a satanic cult that operates and is very involved with organized crime and big money. Now, today on the show, we're going to be highlighting that in a big way by focusing on some of the events recently in British Columbia. The whole relevance of this is that the Vancouver is becoming a hotspot of the Ninth Circle and Vatican crimes. It always has been, but even more so today because of the whole China-Pacific Rim influence. And today on the show, we are featuring an interview with Merv Ritchie. Now, he's a very important source for a lot of the work we've been doing, but unfortunately, Merv has gone missing. We haven't heard from him in weeks. He's been key to this whole campaign because he's an independent journalist who for many years, in a very self-sacrificing way, has documented what's really behind the missing Aboriginal families in British Columbia, especially along what's called the Highway of Tears, Highway 16 in northern BC. And you're going to hear some startling things today right from Merv. He was targeted by the RCMP, thrown in jail over trumped-up charges. His publication, Terrace Daily News, was shut down. And he has highlighted not only who is behind the missing people in British Columbia, but what the economic forces driving all that are, the big money in BC and the whole regime of censorship that comes down on any of us who are exposing these crimes. So this show is especially dedicated to Merv, and wherever you are, Merv, I hope you're still alive, but we are going to be, you know, making that whole link more in the future. But for now, people need to know some of these basic facts. And one of the big things that has come out recently in the news is this campaign to shut down the Coastal GasLink pipeline in British Columbia. All over Canada now, there's massive protests by Native people of the Wet'suwet'en Indian Nation in northern British Columbia. There have been road blockades all over Canada. The Mohawks have been shutting down the rail lines in Ontario and Quebec. All over Canada, you see these protests in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en campaign to shut down Coastal GasLink. But what no one is going into is the fact that Coastal GasLink is itself owned by what's called Changfang Energy, which is owned by PetroChina. It's the largest gas and oil company in China. It's got revenues of somewhere over $40 billion. It's building a super port facility in Prince Rupert, which is very involved in these crimes against Native people because there's a direct link between the liquid natural gas development sites and these areas where Native people are going missing. We know for a fact that the Chinese have sponsored death squads to eliminate Native people off their land. They're working with the RCMP in that. They have a strong link with the Trudeau government because Trudeau has reaffirmed what's called the Foreign Investment Protection Act in Canada, a law which allows China to station its security troops and army on Canadian soil. It's essentially an invasion and treason by the Canadian government, both under the Harper and now the Trudeau governments. Now, these PetroChina facilities are owned 40% by Royal Dutch Shell, which is closely connected to the child-killing British and Netherlands royalty, and PetroChina and Mitsubishi companies, which, of course, devastated the environment all over Asia. Now, this conglomeration is really what's behind a lot of the missing people and is the topic of the protests, although the protesters don't know that because, once again, they're being led around by the nose by this elite Native leadership who are in the process of selling out their struggle. We saw the same thing in the Clayoquot Sound protest at Standing Rock in South Dakota, where certain there's a pretense of protest to camouflage the fact that the Native leadership are selling out the struggle. They're making a deal to allow these pipelines to go ahead. We can predict that's going to happen because it always happens in this way. So the show today is very important in terms of portraying the background as to the corporate forces from China and in Canada that are responsible for this ongoing genocide. And we're going to be featuring this interview with Merv Ritchie I did 2 years ago, but which is very relevant. And like I say, we're putting it out there to bring more protection and light on Merv, since he's either disappeared or in a prison somewhere, since he's been a major target of the RCMP and other forces, which we'll be hearing about. So learn from this interview today. Take action on it. Write to us, itccsoffice@gmail.com. That's the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State. Carry it on. We're back next week live. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Hazel Dickens from the West Pennsylvania Minefields. That was a famous song, a United Mine Workers organizing song. Hazel just died a few years ago. Wonderful woman, bluegrass singer. And we're here today, here we stand, in that spirit, that the welfare of you and I are not on the rich man's mind, folks. We've got to do it from our own kind. That's you and me. That's the philosophy that here we stand. And it's personified today in our guest, Merv Ritchie, one of the few remaining true investigative journalists at the grassroots. He's going to be calling us from northern British Columbia. We're going to be talking about, among other things, how the Royal Canadian Mounted Police is linked to the disappearance and death of Indigenous women. Now, of course, that's no big surprise for any of you who know anything about the genocide and its regime in Canada. But the hard proof is that the disappearances and genocide are continuing today at the hands, as always, of big money. I talk a little bit about that in my latest book, which you should get online, Amazon.com. It's called At the Mouth of a Cannon. And it's about the West Coast land grab that happened through the unholy trinity of church, state, and corporation. And you'll find all that in the book. Just get it at Amazon.com. And it's really the meat of what we're going to be talking about today. And Merv will be on at about 10 after the hour. Before that, I've got a few announcements. We have a great inspirational message way south of our border, in the land of the Mapuche, who are one of the few surviving indigenous nations in South America. The Mapuche Indians for the last few months have been, guess what, burning logging trucks and Catholic churches. Now, what is the connection between a logging truck and a Catholic church? I'll tell you what, the over 2 million acres of Mapuche land have been seized by Catholic families and their logging company interests, backed fully by the Vatican. So the Mapuche took power into their hands as an inspiration to all of us, and a couple of months ago, they started firebombing Catholic churches. Nobody had been killed, but they said to the Catholic Church, time to get off our land, people. You've been killing us, grabbing our children, grabbing our land for way too long. So in response, good old Jorge Bergoglio, the first Latin American and Jesuit Pope, hurried down to Chile this last week to try to, you know, buck up the spirits of all the folks down there and try to get the flock back on board, because like in Ireland, supposedly one of the most loyal Catholic nations on earth, the Chilean people have been turning away from the Catholic Church en masse in recent years. So Jorge went down there, I guess oblivious to his own murderous history in Argentina, where he was trafficking children of political prisoners held by the military junta there during the 1970s. Jorge, with no shame, went down to Chile to try to buck up the spirits of people. And guess what? He got protested big time. Even the place, the Nunciatur, where he was staying in Santiago, got occupied by Chileans and Mapuche Indians, who told him to get the hell out of their country. Well, Jorge, the normally mild-mannered spin doctor, the grandfatherly, smiling pope, turned on them and started yelling at them. And so he's beginning to lose his cool, folks. That's quite a good sign, I think. So let's hear it for the Mapuche Indians. We're going to have more of that in the coming weeks. We're hopefully going to be talking with a representative of the Mapuche and why they're taking this action. But whether it's through firebombs, whether it's through direct action, common law court writs, it's time for these murderous corporations to get off our land. We have the right to reclaim their buildings, seize their property and assets under international law, make citizen arrests,
against the child raping priest and the others who continue to terrorize us and our children. We'll be having more of that, especially in relation to Operation Atonement, which you can read about at itccs.org, the campaign of direct action starting in April 15th all over the world to stop these murderous corporations. And just a few other notes before Merv joins us. For those listening in today, if this is your first time, we've been on the air for over 3 years, and it costs almost $300 a month to do the program. So we have an offer. If you take out an associate membership with this program, that is by donating $50 or more, you will get a free copy of my latest book and any other book of your choosing. The 8 books I published in the last 2 years, you can find it under Kevin Annett at Amazon.com. Just put my name in. All those books will come up. So choose 2 of those books. We'll send them to you, and you can get inside postings about our activities, the work going on in your area, and so on. So take out an associate membership, $50. You can either send a check made out to William Annett to 1000 Walker Street, Unit 223, Holly Hill, Florida, 32117. Or if you want to do a PayPal account payment, you can find at our website, itccs.org, a PayPal button, upper right corner. Just hit that, make the donation. You'll be an associate. You'll get the books. itccsoffice@gmail.com if you want any more information about Operation Atonement. And we're also going to be having more briefings over the upcoming programs about the ways to be involved, kind of a three-step project of research, education, and action, how to take those steps in our communities. And so stay tuned for future shows about that. Finally, a message going out to the folks in Nanaimo. The people at Vancouver Island University might be wondering, what happened to your campus newspaper in the first week in December? Why did this issue suddenly get seized, the issue of the Navigator? Well, you might want to write to the Chancellor of Vancouver Island University, Louise Mandel. She's a Queen's Counsel and Aboriginal lawyer, Aboriginal, not of the original group, lawyer, who ordered the seizure of the entire issue of the Navigator newspaper. Why? Well, because it carried an article by yours truly entitled Who and What is Buried Next Door to Vancouver Island University? Genocide at the Nanaimo Indian Hospital. And it tells you about the mass grave right next to the university and why the university doesn't want you to read about it. So we'll have that broadcast going out soon. But for those of you who want to find out more, write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. Now, I understand our brother Merv is on the air. Hello, Merv. How are you?
Pretty good. You can hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. All right. And it's really good to have you back. I didn't do any kind of intro, except that folks do know you were on the show once or twice before, calling from northern BC. And now I understand that you're facing a challenge in the courts and from the RCMP. Do you want to tell listeners a little bit about that, kind of in a nutshell?
Well, yeah, I can try and be brief. I'm usually quite long-winded.
That's all right.
I've been a publisher, editor publisher of the Terrace Daily News for, was steady for 8 years. And I'd covered a lot of the issues up north. I wrote about everybody, every issue. And there's lots of positive stories about the RCMP. You know, the drugs bust, you know, taking down what they termed the cocaine warehouse up here. But I also covered the negative stories where guys were getting beat up by the RCMP, and I focused specifically on the Indigenous issues, the way the women were coming to me and talking about how the RCMP were behind the missing and murdered women. And so I, you know, that was all anecdotal, of course. I couldn't prove anything, but I'd written a number of stories about how they've taken advantage of people, particularly the Indigenous people. David Eby came up and did it. He was the, at the time, now he's the Attorney General of BC, but at the time he was the head of the BC Civil Liberties Association. And he did a small town justice report coming through all the interior communities, or basically the northern communities, talking about the RCMP. And when he came to Terrace, he discovered that there was a lot of people coming forward and talking about the Indian peoples, the Indigenous peoples being targeted. And I met with him, and he featured numerous stories from our publications. Because I had taken pictures of people being harassed, I'd videotaped. And so these ended up in a small town justice report. And it took up about 10 times as much space as every other small community in that report. And then at the time, what was his name? Tim Shields, I think his name was. He was the PR person, and he called terrorists a crime-ridden community. So we wrote an article demanding an apology from him because there was no crime, you know, essentially none. Anyways, following that small town justice report, the Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International each did a report on the RCMP being singled out as being potentially behind some of these issues. And one of the stories called Those Who Make Us Disappear, and the women were afraid to come forward because the RCMP knew them, so they didn't want to tell their names. We published that, featured I think the National Post was the only major media that actually covered, not sure whether it was Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch's report. So we again featured that. 2 years ago today, I was in Vancouver. I had just had back surgery. I had a herniated disc. And somebody from up north here told me that there is an RCMP officer who is facing 17 charges of rape, abduction, attempted murder, unlawful confinement, just a litany of charges. And I asked, well, how do you know about it? He says, well, it's on the court registry website. So I went to the court registry website, saw this list of charges. And I took a screenshot of that court registry website, and I put it up on my Facebook page and on my news website and asked the question, is this a former RCMP officer? And I can't get into too much detail because it turns out there was a publication then. But I took this off of their website, off the court registry website. Anyways, I found myself in handcuffs at the UBC jail. Because I was at UBC Hospital to have follow-up medical treatment. Next thing you know, I was in a cell. For 2 years, I've been beating back on these charges that I didn't breach anything. But what I discovered was that one of their key witnesses, who they pulled now in the trial, they're not going to use this person, was told by the officer who was her handler. When you're involved in this, the RCMP always give you a handler, that they required a publication ban because some of her relatives were threatening to do her harm if this became public. And I thought, well, that is outrageous. Why, if somebody's threatening to kill you or do harm, then that's what the RCMP should be investigating, not get a publication ban.
Yeah, it sounds boring.
Anyways, it gets a lot stranger, but what has happened is it's silent. Now, it turns out it was a former RCMP officer. He'd been a 25-year veteran, and he worked out of the north of BC. I have to be kind, really careful because I don't want to be in jail again, right? Okay, but
to clarify that, Murph, for one moment, if you mention his name, you can go to jail?
Yes. Or the witness's name. So I have to be very, very careful. But what I'll tell you this is the guy was, I can say, he was a 25-year veteran of the force. He retired a while ago. And my only question, and they keep asking everybody, and nobody's prepared to tell me, who were his partners? Because
right.
If this individual was practicing in the north, and he wasn't alone. You know, it's, you know, 25 years, you, and this went on throughout that time. So, you know, this needs to be dug into deeper. You know, the fella himself, you know, we don't know what happened. You know, everything's under a publication. I didn't attend one day in this courtroom. I just saw what was on the court registry website. I don't know. I know virtually nothing about this trial.
Right. Now, from what you've been able to glean, is there any evidence that they suspect that this Mountie, who they have in custody, is responsible for any of the missing women?
I can't say positive. I don't know what the, what I do know is that the documents that they have given me, which they have to give me some documents to charge me and tell me what I'm being charged with, is they mention the Human Rights Watch report and the Amnesty International report, and that they're in conversations with. Why that was part of a disclosure to me, I've asked. Why not asking cross-examination? Because I am cross-examining in my own defense. And they, you know, why would you even mention that? What's that got to do with the charges against me?
Do you want to do you want to tell the listeners about what those reports are from Human Rights Watch and Amnesty?
Yeah, they're about the women up here in the northwest of BC. Now, this stretches from Prince Rupert to Prince George, the Highway of Tears, what we call up here, that it is, they say that the RCMP are behind it, and they're scared. Those reports say that that women have been taken and raped and told that, you know, to not tell anybody. You know, so, and the reason, and I know it to be true because I had a great relationship with a Tsimshian woman for many years up here, and so I got to know all her family, and you know, one of her aunties in particular was quite adamant that that's what had happened to her, and you know, other people keep telling me the same stories. So for my 5-6 years of covering this and talking about it, and then finally to have Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch actually do something, you know, it was, you know, I was expecting something further to happen after those reports, but nothing did. Apparently, maybe Amnesty International or Human Rights or somebody mentioned that one officer, and then that's why the RCMP, they started investigating this one person.
Well, what's your theory about why this Mountie was... Now, just to clarify, this Mountie has been already tried and jailed, or what's his status right now?
I can't tell you what's going on with the trial. The trial's completed. I don't know if all the sentencing's been done, but I'm not exactly sure what's going on with it. And I don't even want to talk about it. You know, it's to me, it's, what about all the rest of the officers?
Right.
And why
perfect.
Are you, this one officer is indigenous, okay? Let's be clear.
He's Aboriginal.
Yes, so they've taken this one fella out. Now, did he learn this behavior from his co-workers?
Mm-hmm.
That this was all right? Because he could get away with it? Because they got it, maybe his non-indigenous you know, cohorts were doing it, and he just said, well, whatever, you know.
Right.
I don't know what's in his mind, and I don't know how what made him think that he could get away with it.
Well, it's interesting, you know, like I've seen the court documents where Native women year after year describe being raped by Mounties in the residential school, so why would it suddenly end, you know, when they're the power?
You know, well, it's disturbing, but I think what's more disturbing is the extreme manner in which they've come after me. I've been jailed now twice, and I did essentially nothing, but boy, are they trying to shut me up. And I suspect, like many of my other friends in the media here who expose uncomfortable truths, that they're looking to get me silenced so that I can't publish anything on the Internet anymore. Like, there are sentences that are issued. The issue that where people can't go online.
Well, we already know that the if you want to talk briefly about the whole Knights of Columbus shutdown of your publication, that's indicative.
Yeah, well, you know, that was, yeah, it's really the business community, but of course the Knights of Columbus, and they're They're the Catholic Boys Club. They're kind of like the Masons, but you know, people say that the Masonic Lodge is no way associated with them. But I know people that are on Rotary, Masonic Lodge, and Knights of Columbus. So I don't know where these organizations all intersect, but the business community here is very, very small. We have a basically, you know, it's one horse town from the Northwest here. The City West is our major television provider, internet service, telephone provider, and Bell just got just took over the local radio, TV radio, Astral Media. But I was, because I was doing an independent publication and publishing stories the business community, Chamber of Commerce didn't really like, I was being hit pretty hard. When I wrote a story about this new pope that was selected, the Knights of Columbus went to every one of my advertisers and ordered them to stop advertising. Before that, the Chamber of Commerce tried to use their pressure tactics. To, you know, when somebody advertised with me, they would be shunned from contracts, or, you know, the local media would offer them better rates if they would only advertise with them and would never advertise with me again. That was black press. Yeah, I heard lots of stories, and it was difficult to get advertising revenue because I published things that weren't just right-wing. I published the pro-Indigenous story, environmental stories, left-wing as well as I put out all the news releases the government put out, you know, the right-wing stories and pro-RC&T stories as well.
You're an independent journalist, in other words.
Yeah, but when, and I did investigative work.
Yep.
I didn't just do propaganda press releases that everybody else has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did investigative work, and I exposed some of the corruption and the underbelly.
Well, just on that, Merv, what is it the Knights of Columbus found so offensive about what you wrote?
Oh, I think we're really tipping the hat was, the title of the article was, "We Will Never Have a New Pope." It says the Catholics will have a new leader for their cult, but, you know, don't include everybody. As I wrote, when they were selecting this new pope, I wonder if my phone's going to die here, but when they were selecting this new pope, every news broadcast was talking about the pope. It was even Al Jazeera. Didn't matter where you went, CNN, Fox, CBC, CTV, BBC, it was all about our new pope. And I was upset. You know, it's not our new pope. It's their leader of their indoctrination cult, you know. And we don't talk about Scientology. We're going to select our new leader, you know. So that's what I wrote about. That's what they didn't like.
So what is it, you know, what strikes me, Merv?
I'm going to take you off speakerphone here, okay?
Yeah, that's fine. You got technical problem, maybe.
How's this? Is that all right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Anyway, when I got into the comments, it got pretty, people were attacking me, and I was defending myself, and even the minister got involved, you know. So.
Well, here's the thing. The reason I mentioned the whole Knights of Columbus shutdown of your publication is it's not unreasonable to say that the Mounties are doing the same thing to you now with this publication, Ben, and that they do not want information coming out about what looks like possibly a frame-up or scapegoating of one of their number in order to take the heat off the real killers. You think that's plausible?
Oh, it's plausible. Absolutely. I know they don't want anybody to talk about it. I know that for certain. I agree with you. It's quite possible that's...
Let's talk a little bit more broadly about your knowledge of the area. I mean, that is a killing zone, historically and in a lot of ways. I mean, I remember publishing recently some information about the early missionaries who went around to all the northern communities and were inoculating the kids with smallpox. 90% of the village then dies, and the land's preempted and bought up by the business partners of the missionary, right?
Yeah.
Common
yeah.
in British Columbia for that to happen. So do you see this as like a continuation? What is the Highway of Tears? What are all these disappearances all about?
Oh, the resource. This is a matriarchal culture. If you get rid of the women, they're the ones that the names are granted through. It's all the matriline. If you're not from the right matriline, you don't have any lineage to a high-ranking name, and it's only the high-ranking names that have authority over the lands. The same thing as that, what happened down in the States over there, all the oil lands. Fella just wrote a book about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you get rid of the hereditary families, you lose the authority over the land.
Merv, you're fading in and out a bit, your phone.
Yeah, I think I'm going to lose the phone, you know.
You might have to speak up. If you do go out, is there another number we can reach at?
No, this is it for me. Yeah.
All right, well, we'll do our best here. Just try to speak up a bit. You were saying about that these disappearances you think are connected to targeting the women because why again? Just to clarify.
They have the authority. All the authority comes through the matriline. It's the matriarchs that have all the authority. They select who's going to be the chief, and you can't be the chief unless you're right from the right matriline. So if they can target, and that's when our governments work on the laws. If they can't beat us by legal means, then they go to war. But they're trying to do everything legally. And if they can destroy the legal right of ownership of the territories by taking out the high-ranking female lineages, then, you know, they can take the land. But they're doing it otherwise. They're dividing the people up, so they keep them fighting. The Tsimshian are terribly divided. The Gitxsan, they're trying to divide them now. It's the Gitxsan with Tsotsin were the two nations up here that got the Delgamuut decision in the Supreme Court of Canada because they were strong and united. But now they're...
Do you want to tell what folks briefly what the Delgamuut decision was?
Yeah, it was a court ruling, an appeal court ruling. The British Columbia government wanted control of all the forest lands, and the Gitxsan with Tsotsin went all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, and the Supreme Court ruled that, yes, actually, they do still have authority over their lands, and they're going to have to consult with them. That was the duty to consult came from that Gitxsan with Tsotsin decision.
Have you seen in practice what that looks like? I mean, does it help people keep hold on to their land?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that, the follow-up of that is the Haida decision, the Chilcotin decision. There's been many. I just heard you mention Louise Mendel. She was behind those great decisions. She was one of the lawyers. So I was quite surprised to hear that she was behind having your article pulled. Because, when these people are united, working together, you can't beat them. They own this land.
Right. Well, land is one thing, but the experiments that were going on at the Nanaimo Indian Hospital involved the military, the federal government, the United Church, the very actors that she has to deal with all the time. So it's kind of like there's a limit to anyone's, progressivism.
Oh, yes.
when big bucks are involved, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we just saw it in our British Columbia government. Look what John Horgan just did. He doesn't run the government. No.
Tell us what he just did.
Well, he approved the Site C dam, and now he's...
You faded out again. What did he approve?
Yeah, he approved the Site C, assumption of the Site C dam. He's just pursuing the same destruction, and that's going against the Treaty 8 people's indigenous rights. It's an absolute foolhardy, but you could tell by his speech when he announced he was going to approve it, but he didn't write that speech, and he was uncomfortable with it. It's the big money that runs everything. It's resource extraction. People want to blame white people. No, it's resource extraction. That's the issue here. And these lands up here have lots of gold, lots of oil, lots of coal, lots of stuff here. And the resource extractors want it. And that's they're going about it.
So,
are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
Okay.
I just got a question that came in over the board here. They wanted you to explain a little bit more about... hold on. I can't read it quite. Oh, yeah, the reports coming out of Human Rights Watch and Amnesty. How come nothing was done on them is the question.
Well, yeah, that's right. Exactly. How come? Why weren't other media picking up on it? And then when this latest commission that they've got launched here...
the RCMP are excluded from being part of the consideration. Wait a minute, we just had two independent reports, international, highly respected organizations that mentioned the RCMP, yet we're having this national inquiry, and the RCMP are specifically excluded from it. What the heck? And why isn't the media all over it? You know, why is it only these independent people like myself, you know? And then we get shut down and silenced, you know?
Well, that's the whole, you know, you can often tell more by the reaction than by any overt evidence sometimes. And, you know, there's such a regime of silence and intimidation around the whole issue of the disappearances. And a question I had, too, was this fellow who's in custody right now, this Aboriginal Mountie, he hasn't been accused of making women disappear or kill them. You're talking about legal confinement and rape. Is that the extent of the charge?
Well, yeah, there's a litany of them, but no murder, attempted murder. You know? What do I say about it? From what I understand, I don't think he's been in his house arrest, or I don't know. I do not believe he's incarcerated. You know, so it's just so. I wish I could talk about it. You know. And I wish other media would be talking about it. We have a problem, and it's not all the RCMP. I have really great RCMP friends, and I know some of them that I went on ride-alongs with when I was doing my journalism work. That did snap-on gloves looking for a fight. Some of them are absolute jerks that they should be outed, and their own friends that are in the forest should be outing them.
Well, why do
they protect each other?
Why do you think they protect each other?
Well, they depend on each other for their lives. I was a fireman, a captain, a fire department, training officer. We depend on each other for our lives. So you take care of each other. But that's the foundation of it. But in these extreme cases, I'm sensing that there's a lot of them that are involved in this kind of stuff. And as soon as, maybe they compromise each other. And that's
well, I remember.
I can't answer. I say things that sometimes aren't right.
I don't know if this helps, Merv, but 30 years ago when I started working in the downtown east side of Vancouver, and I got to know Native women, they were telling very similar stories about the Vancouver police and what they called the hooker game, where they would grab Native prostitutes, rape them, drug them, and they figured 5 to 10% of them were doing it, but the rest were turning a blind eye because they knew what would happen one day. You know, if they squealed on one of their own number, they might get a bullet in the back. But it's bigger
That's
than
right.
that. With the Mounties, you're dealing with a self-governing. They're like the judges of the churches. They've got their own military courts or internal courts. If you, take the Vatican, they've got their own private prison in the Vatican where they stick people away. Same with the Mounties,
Judge Ramsey was... raping indigenous girls, and then he was having to judge them and stand in front of them after they were picked up on the street for somebody else. He ended up getting arrested and put in jail, and she named the RCMP officers that were involved, and those RCMP officers were never charged or tried because it took too long for the charges to come. I think they have 6 months if they're not brought to justice or brought to trial.
Right.
And another one, a young Native girl who named them, and she told her dad that, that they're never gonna face it, and she took her own life. Now, these things happen all the time, and that's what I was writing about, and that's I've been seriously silenced over it. And
tell us a bit. What are you trying to do now to get the story out? Are you effectively gagged now, or are you trying other means of getting these stories out?
I'm not. No, I'm trying to basically to make a living and. I talk about the issues, but I'm really, I don't have any more media enterprise at all. So, if I'm on Facebook, that's about it. I'm saddened by it all. Well, extremely so. And I'm, you know, I,
I talked to other people, you know, we have to start a new media and we have to do something. But I see a lot of intimidation.
You're breaking up a lot, Merv. Well, we're waiting for Merv to come back. Somebody sent me another note saying, why don't you read over the air the article that was banned by the Vancouver Island University administration when they went around and got their security to grab all the issues of the Navigator newspaper, literally out of the hands of students. I'll be happy to do that. If for whatever reason Merv can't finish the show, I will do that today, and if not, I'll do it next week on our February 4th show, where we're also hopefully we'll have as our guests some of the lawyers who are defending the Grant Township in Pennsylvania, who have been attacked by a fracking company and the state legislature for declaring home rule and saying the fracking companies have no right on their land, get out. Well, now the Pacific General Energy and Pennsylvania courts are going after the lawyers for Grant Township and fining them over $50,000. So we're going to have some of those folks with us next week, hopefully. And I'm going to give Don a minute, and if we can't get Merv back on, I will read the banned article from the Navigator newspaper early December 2017. Okay, let's try again, Merv. Hi.
Hey, yeah, I'm
okay.
Here.
We were talking about banning and censorship and your situation right now, but do you see, like, have you gotten responses, anybody else kind of coming forward with new information or any encouragement at all?
No. Of course, I can't talk about the details of it, but no, there's the silencing is pretty successful. Yeah. You know, I like to say this, maybe your listeners will attach this, you know. You get all the news worth exactly what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody pays for the news. Oh, wait, resource companies pay for the news. Governments pay for the news. Cancer Society pays for the news. You know, pharmaceuticals, they do. Everybody, but you don't pay anything for your news.
Right.
So you get you get what it's worth. You know, we need to have a whole new medium across North America. But if we're only going to have advertisement and money coming from the large resource extraction sector and those that support it, then, you know, we can't produce the stories.
Well, there is the so-called alternative media. Have you been getting offers from any of the alternative press to publish your story?
You know, no. There's a Common Ground in Vancouver. It's a great newspaper. Joseph Roberts does that, but he's plugged into advertising as well. And you know, I think he's rather fearful. He doesn't want a lawsuit. Nobody wants that because, you know, there's the slap lawsuits that happen all the time to silence people.
He seems to like the Pope as well. They print nice pictures of the Pope on the cover sometimes. And they've systematically refused all of our evidence and discussions of residential schools. So
well,
I think you're right.
It's difficult. You know, you want to stay in business, right? And you want to make money. So we don't have a brave population. We have a timid population. That's why fear works so well. It's sad, you know. I keep doing. I'm always struggling and helping people out, but now I have to do it on a personal basis. You know?
Right.
You know.
Merv, is there anything else? Anything else you want to leave people with? Any message or updates? Like, tell us first of all when you have to go back in court again and what you're facing.
No, I go back next month. I had one charge already dropped completely. That was basically a harassment charge. They picked me up at Kitsilano Coast Guard base. The Prime Minister and his wife were there, and the Princess were there. You know, and I was there with my campaign bus. I started the Land Air Water Party of BC, and I had a big banner up there kind of protesting some of their actions. And they arrested me there, too.
That's a crime. Is it a public protest now?
Well, they tried to attach it to the same charge, but anyways, yeah. You know, I guess it's you mentioned China, and I mentioned it last time too. They, you know, they have an extreme amount of influence. If you anybody looks at the FIPA agreement and look at Charter or Chapter 33, Section D, it talks about the right of them to be able to come onto Canadian soil and protect their investments with any military might they deem necessary. So
you're talking. You're talking China.
Yeah, they can come on. They can come onto Canadian soil with any military might they want to protect their investments. That's in Chapter 33 of the FIPA agreement, Foreign Investment Protection Agreement that Stephen Harper signed, and only Elizabeth May actually spoke about it for 2 minutes.
Foreign Protection Investment Agreement?
Yes. Yeah, you can look it up, Article 33.
It's
a tragedy of what we have allowed. And so they get to come in and set up their security. So it's Kinder Morgan. That's why our military or our government has said that they will bring in our military to protect the construction of this Kinder Morgan project. Because if
That's
they don't, China has the right to. And that'll be a real embarrassment. So they'll do everything. Right now they're starting with the RCMP.
So in other words, there is no Canadian sovereignty. I mean, we knew that already, but sovereignty is signed away in the sense that China can bring in its own soldiers to protect their investments on Canadian soil. Is that what you're saying?
They can do. The agreement doesn't specifically say soldiers. It says weapons of war. They can bring in any weaponry they want to protect their investments. And now they've set up something in Saskatchewan. Some big mall that, you know, it's now considered sovereign Canadian or Chinese soil. Like they can bring in these weapons to supply their security establishment, is the words.
Okay.
So, you know, we are in a situation where there's no such thing as sovereignty. You know, anybody that believes that. Canada is the Hudson's Bay Company, just a bit refined.
Right.
We're a resource extraction sector. And anybody that stands in the way of Rio Tinto or any other foreign corporation that wants to take resources. Now, China isn't a bad corporate customer. People got to stop thinking that Canada's the bad corporate citizen. We're the ones that go out there and destroy other Indigenous people's territories in Peru, wherever we go. Our mining companies are some of them are just tragic.
Yep.
You know, Clifford Frame, how many people has he killed on Canadian soil? He's all those people in the mine back east, you know, that blew up. You know, Canada's not this pretty little place, you know. The world does not need more Canada. You know,
the act is called the Foreign Investment Protection Agreement. Article 32?
32.
We're going to look that up. I'd like to have you back on at some point and talk about the details of that, how you think that's playing out, and if you know of witnesses who've seen this in operation and that kind of thing. That would be helpful.
Well, they're the ones that are building the pipelines across the north here. You know, people think that it's, you know, our local people, but, you know, that's not true.
Right.
And you know, Christy Clark signed the agreement to allow the Chinese to build the LNG plants and facilities. And Pat, what is his last name, of Enbridge, he agreed that China could bring their own workers in and supply their own piping to build the Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline. You know, we do not have, you know, some idyllic nation that people seem to think that we wave a Canadian flag. You know, I was born in Saskatchewan, Kevin. I cheered for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, right? And then I moved to B.C., so I get to wave a different flag, and now it's the B.C. Lions. What's the difference? Wave your Canadian flag, wave your Chinese flag, wave your American flag. It's all waving for another resource extraction game. You know, we're humans. John Lennon was right. Just imagine there's no borders, you know, no religions.
Of course,
we have to start taking care of each other.
Who's in the way of these corporations gets chewed up, and you know that from your contact with Native people, what they've had to face. I was going to ask, I've heard through the grapevine in the downtown east side and other places that there has been Chinese involvement in the disappearances. Do you have any evidence about that?
I don't know. No, I don't have any evidence of the Chinese involvement in the disappearances, no. The RCMP, you know, it seems to be clear, it's anecdotal, not until you see somebody else do it. But, up here, it's kind of a training ground. We got a lot of young officers that come in here and they get their get their feet wet in the thing, and then they get taught by the people that have been here. And most of them have never seen these true indigenous cultures. I mean, this is an amazing culture up here. You know, the Nisga are absolutely stunning. They're having Hobie coming up here. We have the All-Native Basketball Tournament coming up in 2 weeks in Prince Rupert. And it is the most amazing culture. And some of these offices, I think, are quite blown away by it. And others see a Native woman hitchhiking on the side of the highway. I mean, they're beautiful women, I tell you. They're incredibly attractive, and I can see it. I'm a young 22-year-old buck coming from Toronto who's never been out. They're beautiful, these girls. And, you know, if they take advantage of them, they get away with it. And
yep.
I suspect that's what's happened. And it's not a bunch of them. It's just a few of them.
Okay, Murph, I want to thank you for being on. We've got need a little bit more time at the end of the show, but keep us posted. Keep me posted about what's going on with your trial, any further harassment. We'll have you back on again.
Sure. I'd like to talk about Chapter 33 of the FIFA agreement some more, too.
We'll definitely do that.
That's outrageous.
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you, Murph.
Thanks to my friends on the front line. All right.
Thank you, and good luck.
Thanks for the call.
Talk to you soon. Okay. That was Merv Ritchie calling from Terrace, British Columbia. We have about 7-8 minutes. I want to just touch on this because people keep writing saying, people from Nanaimo saying, I want to hear what was banned. We will, in terms of MERV, we're going to do a follow-up on this. And again, that's the Foreign Investment Protection Agreement, allowing Chinese security forces on Canadian soil, Article 32. Look it up yourself. We'll talk more about that. The article was entitled, Who and What is Buried Next Door to Vancouver Island University? Genocide in Our Own Backyard. Issued November 15th, 2017, published, and I know because I spoke directly to the editor, Cole Scheisser, the editor of the Navigator newspaper. He was all on board. He wanted to have this published. It was published, and then the issue was yanked. Cole then did a 180-degree turn and pretended that he had never approved the article, which was a total lie. The article reads, a quote from Joan Morris, I was used like a guinea pig in the Nanaimo Indian Hospital for over 7 years. Lots of children died in there, and they're still lying out in that field somewhere. Joan said that at a public forum at Malaspina College, which was the predecessor to Vancouver Island University. Now, this is right next door to the university, and it's on land occupied still by the military and hungered after by the university. That could be why they suppressed the article. The article reads, look to the south of the BIU campus across 5th Street, and you'll see a tangle of foliage behind stern barbed wire fencing. For over half a century, it was the site of the Nanaimo Indian Hospital, a prison-like experimental center run by the United Church and the Canadian military. Survivors claim and records confirm that hundreds of children died there from grisly medical experiments and other barbarities. They were all our Aboriginal kids, scooped off reserves or out of the residential schools, describes Joan Morris, a Songhees Native woman from Victoria who was incarcerated at the hospital when she was barely 5 years old. The Indian Affairs doctor lied to my mother and said I had TB when I didn't. They had me in that hospital until I was a teenager. They were always giving me shots and things to drink to make me sick. They'd do surgeries on me. They broke all the bones in my feet so I couldn't run away. Later, I found out I couldn't have any children. They were sterilizing a lot of the girls in there, unquote. Joan first surfaced her story more than a dozen years ago at a series of public forums at Vancouver Island University. At these forums, Joan named the men who experimented on her, like local doctors Weinrib and Schmidt, who were employed by the Canadian military during the 1960s and 70s. Shortly after Joan gave her talks to handful-sized audiences at the college, the remaining buildings on the grounds of the hospital were bulldozed down by the city of Nanaimo, and the area was padlocked. It still is. The official censorship goes far. In the spring of 1999, shortly after the media first reported the hospital allegations, the Government of Canada officially sealed its archives on Nanaimo Indian Hospital and all other Indian hospitals across Canada. But separate records held at the UBC Kerner Library, published by yours truly, confirmed that the NIH, the Nanaimo Indian Hospital, received major funding from both the Defense Research Board in Ottawa and the United Church of Canada to conduct, quote, classified experimental research on generations of Aboriginal women and children. The hospital was just the tip of a huge iceberg of state and church-sponsored crimes against humanity in Canada that span over a century and have never been prosecuted. Some of this is found at murderbydecree.com. In it, Sarah Modeste of the Cowichan Nation describes being sterilized at the King's Daughters Clinic in Duncan, B.C. in the early 1950s by Dr. James Goodbrand. As Sarah describes, quote, Dr. Goodbrand said to me, if you marry Freddie, I'll have to do an operation on you because he's not a Christian, unquote. So later when Goodbrand delivered my first baby, after that I was bruised and hurting. Then I learned I'd been sterilized. Goodbrand told me he was being paid $300 by the government for every Indian woman he sterilized, unquote. Well, Joan Morris and the children at the Indian hospital have never had their day in a Canadian court. They had it at an historic trial in Brussels during 2012 and 2013, based in part on Joan's testimony and those of dozens of other survivors of the Canadian genocide. The International Common Law Court of Justice found Canada, its churches, and the Crown of England and Vatican guilty of crimes against humanity. As a result of this verdict, and under international law, Canadians are obligated not to pay their taxes to a convicted criminal regime like their own government, or to fund similarly sentenced bodies like the United Church, lest they be found guilty of colluding in their crimes and cover-ups. Whatever happens, the atrocity remains. The lost children of the Nanaimo Indian Hospital are waiting to be found and brought home for a proper burial. And the Vancouver Island University community has to ask itself how it can dwell alongside and remain oblivious to genocide in its own backyard, a crime that, if not confronted, can only continue. For more information, see murderbydecree.com and itccsoffice@gmail.com. Now, that was a condensation, because we didn't have enough time today, but that was a condensation of the main points of the article published in the Navigator newspaper, the student newspaper of Vancouver Island University campus, Nanaimo, British Columbia, in the first this week in December 2017. The issue was then pulled by the university administration, apparently at the order of the university chancellor, Louise Mandel, a native lawyer in Vancouver, and Ralph Nilsson, the president of the college. You folks might consider writing to them and finding out why they censored that article. Why is it that the university wants no mention of medical genocide in their own backyard shared with their students or anyone publicly? Kind of smacks of what's happened to Merv Ritchie up in northern British Columbia. The cone of silence descends on anyone in Canada who starts talking about these things, and the hammer of repression. That's our message for today, folks. Take it to heart, act on it, learn more about the Operation Atonement coming up, which is a tool we have to fight back against the censorship and these crimes, the ongoing crimes against our children and all of us. The Mapuche Indians of Chile have shown us the way. Direct action is the way to go. And it's getting a reaction. There is a turning point coming, folks. It requires an inner and an outer reclamation of our hearts, minds, and souls first before we can take the physical action. We're going to be talking about that more in the future. If you want to learn more, go to our sites, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. Get my latest book, At the Mouth of a Cannon, which covers a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today. It's at amazon.com. Or you can write to me, Kevin Annett, thecommonland@gmail.com. It's been an honor again, folks. We'll be back here next Sunday again, 3 p.m. Pacific, Eastern Time, 6 p.m. and 11 p.m. to all our loyal listeners over in the land of Albion, at 11 p.m. Greenwich Time every Sunday. And until next week, you stay strong and stay clear. Keep hope alive. We'll get there. Thank you.